And American Pastimes is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Performances, presenting folk and rock icons Sean Colvin and Steve Earle. That's at Laxon Auditorium on Sunday, September 11th. Both Colvin and Earle are trailblazing songwriters and performers and have been collaborating for over 30 years. Tickets for Sean Colvin and Steve Earle are available at the University Box Office at 3rd and Chestnut in downtown Chico, or call them up at 898-6333 or go to chicoperformances.com. And another underwriter for American Pastimes Community Radio is Chico Chamber of Commerce, committed to enhancing the economic vitality of Chico for its businesses and residents. For more information about chamber impacts and opportunities and to join, visit ChicoChamber.com or call 891-5556. Up next is Sea Change Radio. This is FM 90.1, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Sea Change Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by locally owned Broadway Heights, serving California cuisine overlooking downtown Chico on the corner of 3rd and Broadway. Voted Best of Chico, Broadway Heights serves award-winning appetizers, salads, focaccia sandwiches, pizza, dinner, entrees, desserts, beer, and wine. And they have happy hours from 3:30 to 5:30 with drink and pizza specials. They're open every day at 11. They're upstairs at 300 Broadway. Broadway Heights also has a private room for parties, bridal showers, and group and business meetings.
This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
If there's no measurable and quantifiable way to measure the impact of sustainable development goals and environmental goals, how can you know if you're a success or not?
If you've been tuning into the Olympics in Rio this week, you've probably watched your fair share of inspirational profiles of athletes. You may also have been following some of the stories emerging out of Brazil about the corruption, poor environmental stewardship, and social justice transgressions surrounding the Olympics. It's enough to make the most ardent sports fan a little ambivalent. In Rio, athletes will be swimming or sailing in water that's literally crappy. Some athletes may be taking home gold, silver, bronze, or just hepatitis. It may turn out that the more emotional story is not an athlete profile, but one of environmental malfeasance and social injustice. It tugs at the heartstrings, all right, but not in the way that NBC had hoped. This week on Sea Change Radio, we take a deep dive into some of the issues surrounding the 31st Olympiad, as I'm joined by Kate Zerenner of the Environmental Defense Fund. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Kate Zerenner. She's a manager of energy and water initiatives at the Environmental Defense Fund. Kate, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
So you have a recent blog post on the EDF site called Going for the Green, Rio Olympics Show Link Between Environment, Economy, and Health. Why don't you first summarize some of the goals that were set environmentally, and then we'll talk about the realities.
London Olympics in 2012, the Summer Olympics in 2012, were considered to be the greenest Olympics. And they had a lot of very high-level goals that they set. And they had a reduced in renewable energy, increasing in water recycling. They cleaned up a polluted river valley. They only used wood from sustainable sources. These were all in their goals. They would use the soil that they used to build pools, to use it to landscape local parks. I mean, they had a lot of very high-end, high-minded, aggressive environmental goals, and that sort of set the standard. They were going to be the greenest Olympics, and so this is the next one that comes after it, and they also set a lot of high goals. The problem is that since the goals have been made, a lot of problems have beset Brazil and Rio in particular. They've always had a lot of problems. It's a big country with a very complex history, very complex political structure, but they've been plagued by drought. 85% of their electricity is generated by hydropower, so the drought is creating problems just in that regard. So if you're wanting to be a green, renewable energy-focused Olympic Games and you don't have enough water to power your main renewable energy source, that's already a problem. The pollution of some of the waterways, they were pledging to clean it up, not only for the Games, but just for the people who lived there, and that's been set aside with the other big problem that they've been facing, which is economic. They've had some impeachment proceedings that started against their president earlier this year. The state of their economy is very dire.
Is that mostly because of oil revenues dropping, or is there more to it?
That's a big component to it. The corruption is causing lots of problems, the impeachment proceedings, and then you throw on top of that Zika. So they've already had a lot of problems to begin with. Hosting an Olympic event is already a huge burden. They hosted the World Cup in 2014. It's already a big burden on the country. The World Cup and the Olympics are considered the two mega events in terms of sporting events in the world. On top of the Commonwealth Games is usually considered another one of the mega events. It's already a huge burden for any country, any city to host the Olympics. And so almost no city comes out ahead from the Olympics when you look at how it's done in the past. And then Brazil's facing all these other things on top of it. I have a very good friend who's from Brazil. She lives in DC, and she said she was getting out of her Uber the other day, and her Uber driver, when he heard that she was from Brazil, he said, "I'm just really sorry about everything that's happening in your country." She said random people are just telling her how sorry they are. It's made international news. I mean, some of the things like the Guanabara Bay, which is where the Olympic sailing is going to take place, and a couple of other events, is generally considered to be an open sewer. So there's some real environmental hazards that are taking place already. They're 51% over budget in terms of the planning for the games. They have a lot of broken promises. They were planning for a high-speed rail between Sao Paulo and Rio that never even put out bids, because that's one of the cornerstones of a green Olympics is to increase public transportation ridership. They also were proposing to do solar panels meant to power several of the stadiums. They just never went up. The dire economic circumstances have thrown a spanner into the works of the entire game. So the games were going to be a burden to begin with, financially, but then you throw on top of that all of the political turmoil, the economic turmoil, and the health issues on top of it. It's a pretty distressing scene right now.
So I don't know if you've seen any interviews with, there's a former IOC member whose name escapes me, who is talking about how great the Beijing Olympics were in 2008, and they were just the most organized, completely disregarding the social justice issues and environmental issues and economic hardships that befell the Chinese people. But they were so pleased with the quote-unquote organization and probably the messaging and propaganda that they then went and gave them the 2022 Winter Games in Beijing, which doesn't have really any natural advantages in terms of hosting a Winter Games. Maybe you can draw some parallels for us between the 2008 Beijing Games and these 2016 ones in Rio.
Yeah, I think the organization piece is interesting. So the Olympics are generally viewed as a union of sports, culture, and environment, at least since the 1994 Lillehammer Games, when that was sort of the sustainable development was for the first time incorporated as part of the legacy going forward of the Olympic Games. So the Olympics are supposed to be the union of sports, culture, and environment. So culture, bringing all these different countries from around the world to one place, but a big part of that also is highlighting the city where they are hosting. So I don't, you know, every culture is different, and looking at the differences in a Brazilian culture versus a Chinese culture, already you're going to see some differences in how they would organize things. That's not to say the Brazilians aren't incredibly organized. They organize the biggest carnival in the world every single year, and in addition to being faced with all these other social and economic and environmental pressures, they're still able to pull that off. So I would say there are some similarities in terms of there's some concerns about cost overruns and really the feasibility of doing things, and there's a lot of concerns about pollution in China as well. Looking at the 2022 Winter Olympics, some of those events are going to be held on the edge of the Gobi Desert, which the snow there rarely exceeds 10 inches a year. So it's a complicated thing. I mean, there's just like any major event, when you're looking at any component of it, it's going to be complicated. The environmental component is very hard. There's no standard way to measure the environmental success of a game, of the events. We don't have any sort of way to quantitatively assess the impact of these games. The issues at stake are very complex. It's over an extended period of time. A lot of games in the last decade or so have really looked at carbon offsets. They're looking at offsets for Rio games as well, although that seems to be less of a problem as more and more people are not wanting to go. I saw in the news yesterday that they're giving away tickets in Brazil to Brazilians, especially low-income Brazilians. So it's just great to bring them into the games, but they're doing it because they need to fill the seats, because it looks really bad on international TV if you have a bunch of empty seats. So it's a very, very complex issue, just like the countries themselves. I mean, when you look at the election in the U.S. this year as well, there's so many issues at stake. Everything is very complex, and there's no one easy answer. I would say, you know, London was the gold standard in my mind for an environmental games, for really thinking through how to be an environmentally friendly Olympic event. And at the same time, they ended up having to use 400 extremely polluting diesel generators because there are just so many people and there's so much going on. So even the very best green Olympics still had some issues. And I would say for every London, there's a Sochi. And Sochi was a disaster in terms of the environment. And they said they wanted to be a zero waste game. And then it turns out there was an illegal waste dump just outside the games where they were just dumping everything. So, I mean, it runs the gamut, and it's just a very hard undertaking, and trying to consider all the different components of what goes into a successful games, and then adding on top of that the environmental impacts. I would actually argue that the environmental impact should be just woven in through the whole thing, which is what they're trying to do. That's the direction we're going. It's just, I mean, poor Brazil, they're just facing everything right now.
It doesn't seem like they're really benefiting from economies of scale when it comes to hosting the second largest international sporting event, the World Cup in 2012. They're really doesn't seem like they're, it seems like they basically started with a clean slate. What was behind that? Is that more the IOC's standards, or is this kind of a self-inflicted wound?
I wouldn't say necessarily it's IOC standards. You know, there are standards in place since 1996. The Olympic Charter was changed to require environmental issues and sustainable development to be the third pillar of the movement besides sport and culture. So cities now have to address sustainability issues in their bids, but it's actually more rhetorical than practical. So there's no formal agreed upon criteria of what that actually means. How do you assess that? There's no monitoring or measuring of the impacts in any real way. So that's a problem we face in a lot of issues down to city and state policy levels in the U.S. So a lot of times we'll have environmental laws or regulations without any teeth. So if you're not able to measure and enforce, you can't actually see what your savings are. And that's the same case here on a very large scale. So when you think about the impacts of people traveling from all over the world, the spectators and the athletes, all the equipment that has to be run, the air conditioning, all the things that have to be done, and then on top of that, you're putting in social justice issues like the displacement of people. When Brazil hosted the World Cup, there were issues with slave labor. If there's no measurable and quantifiable way to measure the impact of sustainable development goals and environmental goals, how can you know if you're a success or not? And so London took it upon itself to sort of, they hired WWF, the World Wildlife Fund, and a consulting firm that they actually went in and had it measured to the best of their ability. But that's really on them. That they weren't required to do that.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Kate Zarenner from the Environmental Defense Fund. So, Kate, let's dig a little deeper into the environmental shortcomings that seem to be on display for the whole world to see in Rio de Janeiro as the Olympics kick off. The sewage. A third of Rio's population doesn't have modern sanitation. Rio had promised to fix this for the Olympics. They failed at this. Why? And let's talk about the impact now that this will have on the games itself.
The Olympic organizers had said about 80% of the wastewater produced by Brazilians that live around the most polluted bay, which is Guanabara Bay, would be treated by the time the game started, but now they're saying that no new sewage plants have been installed, and that the new sewage plants that have been installed will only clean up about 50% of the waste, and some are saying that the figure is even much lower than that. I think they've just gotten overwhelmed, I think is what the issue is, and it's not necessarily I think to some extent it's the extent of the problems to begin with. When you're talking about, I mean, they basically were using waterways as dumping sites. They were open sewers. So if you don't have appropriate sewer systems and running water in some of the favelas, you've got to put it somewhere. So some of it was being overwhelmed by the problem. It had been going on for too long. But then on top of that, when you have the economic crisis that hit them, they're less able to deal with the problems that they had. And so this is a big showcase for them. They want to look good, but at the same time, they have to struggle to keep up with the most basic amenities. Part of the other promises they made was to improve the favelas to a large extent. So they were sort of ramshackle shanty towns, for lack of a better word. And so one of the promises that they'd made was to actually turn them into more urbanized, more safe, more healthy structures. And they've been falling short on that as well. So I think the enormity of the problem has overwhelmed them to some degree, but the economic and health crises on top of that has made it much, much harder for them to really meet the promises that they'd made. They still have done some incredible things. I don't want to make it sound like it's all bad. I mean, in about the past decade, they have reduced their deforestation by about 80%, which is huge because the carbon emissions from deforestation were enormous. So that's a really big deal. There are some concerns that that's starting to go up again because they're having some problems with enforcement. But they've done some other things that are going ahead. So they've had some successes. Like some of the stadiums were designed to naturally reduce energy consumption by the use of the natural light, daylighting, and using solar energy to help. Most of those solar panels haven't gone in, but they have been invested to a certain degree. And they're saying that about 70% of the infrastructure will be reused after the game. So, for example, they're planning to turn the Olympic Village into condos. I don't know what the state of them will be, especially since some of the teams, like the Australians, were saying that the toilets were blocked and there was open wiring. And so it's everything's sort of a glass half full, glass half empty scenario at this point.
And there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star, and all the years
time is short and the world is long.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Kate Zerenner from the Environmental Defense Fund, looking at Rio, London, and Beijing. It seems like these countries just have to start from scratch and haven't really built on the lessons learned in past Olympics.
As I said, the culture component is one of the three pillars of Olympics, and so I think every game wants to be unique, that they want to showcase what each country, each city has to offer. And so they're also going to undertake the games in the way that makes the most sense for their own particular culture. There is supposed to be a sort of standard set by the Olympic Committee, but again, each one's trying to be better and to be bigger and to be a reflection of their own culture, and so there are going to be things that are different. One of the arguments I've seen put forward that I find very interesting is having a permanent site for the Olympics. So you're not doing this every time. And so one of the proposals I saw said, one of the islands off the coast of Greece that is close to Greece, so you're sort of going back to the home of the Summer Olympics, but then you're having a small, relatively small, uninhabited island that's still easy to get to by ferry or plane, and then you have everything there, and then when the Olympics are not going on, you have a training facility. You have all these training facilities for athletes from around the world who maybe don't have the infrastructure to train in their home countries. So that's a compelling idea. So you do a big build up once and you do it to the highest environmental standards and then you maintain it. So that's less of a footprint, much less of a footprint. I haven't seen anything similar for the Winter Olympics, but I've also seen some comments that with climate change, we may be losing a lot of winter sports anyway. So that's an interesting idea, is that maybe we have a permanent site. And so the cultural is about the culture of the Olympics and maybe not so much the culture of the rotating cities. That's becoming too much of a burden for the cities. I read one article that said, you know, in the bid for these Olympics, Rio was announced the winner to host, but maybe Chicago was actually the real winner because they went through the exercise of planning for all the city improvements, but they didn't have to actually host the games. So they had then this blueprint for the city of how to improve their infrastructure and their social services and their athletic facilities without actually having to go through with the additional burdens that come with hosting the games. So I thought that was an interesting perspective as well.
That is interesting. I also saw that Norway decided to pull back its bid from hosting the 2022 Winter Games. They decided, you know, it's just not worth it. And even though this is a country that's extremely successful in the Winter Games and has hosted it twice, they've had enough.
Yeah.
Maybe because they tend to be a country that has pretty sound policy, as reflected by their low incarceration rates, their high education standards, their small income inequality gap, etc.
It's interesting too, because there's been some evidence that cities that have hosted in the past, if they host again, they have a lower cost overruns because they already have some of the infrastructure already set up. And the only city that has actually ever profited from the Olympics is LA. So they've done it twice. The Qatar World Cup, when the Qatar was announced, I'm sure I wasn't the only one who was very confused by that announcement of why they were chosen to host the 22 World Cup. And one of the interesting things they're doing, and you know, I live in a really hot, dry state as well, so they're promising carbon neutral air conditioning for their stadiums using absorption chilling that relies on solar power. And I thought that was a very interesting component. So because when they first announced it, I thought, oh, we're going to have Atlanta all over again. I mean, it's the World Cup versus the Olympics. But in Atlanta, there were a lot of athletes who had a lot of problems with the heat and particularly the humidity there. So it's interesting when they're thinking about if you're going to host in a hot, dry place, thinking about how to make carbon neutral AC. There are a whole host of other problems that are associated with trying to build that kind of infrastructure in the desert, just the amount of water that's needed for building and just everything is sort of staggering. But it's just interesting as we think about how climate change advances as well, what kind of climatic changes you'll be seeing in these different places that are submitting bids to host games, either the World Cup or the Olympics or the Commonwealth Games, that as climate change advances, it's going to make it more and more challenging to find the resources you need and to not put additional pressure on the climate. So it's a very complicated issue.
Do you really think Los Angeles benefited much from hosting the games twice? It was over like 50 years, I think, in between hosting them. I mean, Los Angeles in 1932 is a little different from LA in 1984. It seems like they weren't exactly using the same stadiums and stuff.
They weren't using the same stadiums, but they were the only city that has actually had anything of a profit coming out of the games. Has it been completely in the hole coming out of the games?
I'm guessing that it was more that it was when they had really turned on the sponsorship angle with the Olympics by 84. I could be wrong, but
yeah, that could be a part of it. Also, LA also has a lot of professional sports and a lot of stadiums and a lot of training facilities. So they may have been starting from at a higher starting point.
And in 1984, when Los Angeles hosted the Olympics, I don't know if the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, had the sort of demands and standards that it has now. And those standards don't necessarily fit. The environmental demands seem to be largely rhetoric when you take into account the amount of economic development that's required nowadays to host a game. I mean, they want high-speed rail built, they want all these other things. I don't know if that was in the demands in 1984, because Los Angeles,
it wasn't.
They still have fairly, their public transportation is still sorely lacking, as most Los Angeles residents can attest.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. No, the environmental standards or the environmental requirements were not made a requirement until 1996, so after the Lillehammer Games. So it's a fairly recent, it's only 20 years ago. The Norway's prime minister at the time of the Lillehammer Games in 94 was chair of the UN Commission that promoted the idea and practice of sustainable development. So that was the first time it was ever a discussion at any of the Olympics. And so 2 years later, the Olympic Charter was amended to include sustainable development and environmental goals. So that LA was, that was not even a component. And so, and you'll see, if you've seen in the Olympics since then, so Sydney 2000, they fixed up a part of an inner city contaminated site. They were part of a citywide remediation and greening projects. And Torino in 2006, they had a goal to reduce their carbon footprint. They reduced their water use and snowmaking. It was the first time they introduced carbon offsets for travel, for athletes and for spectators.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Kate Zarenner of the Environmental Defense Fund. So, Kate, if we listen to the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, everything's swell and dandy. But obviously, the status quo is not tenable. Can you think of some solutions that in an ideal world could happen?
So if we're looking at purely from the games, I'm not interested in enriching IOC members. But if we're looking at how to make the games more equitable and more environmentally sustainable, a permanent site makes sense to me. And if you're thinking about like where would you do it, and you think about, you know, an island off the coast of Greece, you know, one of the Greek islands, it's not really inhabited, so you're not talking about a displacement. You reduce your potential for social injustices. It's easy to get to, all those kinds of things. And also you're sort of bringing it back to the home of and the heart of the Olympics. So there's a lot of emotion tied up in Olympics as well. It's a big deal to make it to the Olympics. I just found out that someone I know is actually going to run in the steeplechase, which is pretty exciting.
I don't know if Athens